You can be turned to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, please. It seems like the questions related to marriage and divorce never seem to end. I guess when you think you've heard them all, somebody will come up with a new one. That was pretty much the case recently. A friend of mine, going through this personally, had an issue come up in this question that I had not really considered before, and that is, if one's spouse, if you think that there is an affair going on, but they deny it, but you have evidence that that's the case, how much evidence would be sufficient to be sure of that? Or do you have to catch the person, quote unquote, in the act, as the scriptures talk about some? So, that's not something that I had ever really considered very, very much before. Interestingly, by the way, although we're not going to look at it, Numbers chapter 5 describes that very scenario where someone suspects his wife of adultery, but she denies it, and they were to bring him before the priest and have her drink some, like, bitter water, and it would have an effect. It's a very interesting passage, but that doesn't apply to us today. We live under the New Testament. And so as I was studying that, I reached out to some preacher friends that are on a little group on Facebook in a private forum where we can discuss things, and it's a handy place to sort of, especially if it's a question of a technical nature having to do with Greek or something like that, which I can't read, it's nice to have people to ask questions to when those things come up. So I kind of bounced this off of these guys. What do you think about this particular scenario? And one of them just sort of completely blew the whole thing up because he replied with this way out in left field response that basically says Christians can get divorced and remarried for any reason. It's all okay. Let me clarify. He said the divorce is wrong, but once somebody is divorced, they can get remarried. It doesn't matter. And furthermore, he said that's what Paul teaches. And so, you can imagine the response. Lots of typing. And then we had a video, conference the three of us to discuss that and try to sort of, figure out where he's coming from and steering back if possible. But he's way down the road on this idea that he's latched onto. And so I want to make a couple of points about that. Number one, no human, no person is the authority on these things, including me, and not the elders. And because he said the elders he worked with agree with him, this particular preacher. So that's number one. The authority is the scriptures. The best that I or any other human can do is to help explain what the scriptures are saying. That's the best we can do, is to try to, you know, study and then share. And that's what we do. We just preach the word. And so number one, you know, no person is the authority. And what that means, number two, is if you are in a situation and you're looking for someone to approve what you want to do, you can find somebody that will. No matter what it is. I mean, if you want to, whatever it comes up, there's somebody out there that'll tell you, yes, that's perfectly fine and God approves. There is, you can find that person. And so that's a kind of a caution to be very careful. That isn't really what matters. Whether I approve or disapprove, whether the elders approve or disapprove, isn't what matters. It's really what does God approve and disapprove of. And the only way we can possibly know that is to see what he says in his word. And so we just have to keep going back to it and say, what does the word say, regardless of what people say about the word? And then, finally, as we'll see as we look at this, that, you know, there are some questions. We each just have to study it. We have to come to our own conclusions. We're all going to stand before God. We're all going to give account for ourselves. And I don't believe this applies to anybody in the room. As far as I know, nobody's going through this at the moment, and I'm glad. Now, there could be some problems I'm not aware of, but as far as I know, we don't have anybody at the moment going through this particular type of crisis, and this is the best time to study this subject, because once you're in the middle of it, it's really hard to think clearly. And so we need to be super clear and grounded on what the scriptures say while we're not going through the middle of it, because when our emotions get involved, and there's things we really want to do, then it's very tempting to listen to someone who tells us what we want to hear. And so let's study it from time to time just to make sure that we have this down. And so tonight what we're really going to do is look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7 about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Basically, the whole chapter is Paul's response to some questions about marriage from the Corinthians. And so, you would think, wow, if we have a chapter of answers from Paul about marriage, this is going to make everything nice and clear. But there, even Paul's answers are a little bit difficult. We're listening, it's like you're listening to somebody talking on the phone and you can't hear what the other person's saying. We're reading Paul's responses to some questions. We don't have a copy of the questions. So we have to kind of guess, what was the problem that they had? Why were they asking? Why is Paul saying what he's saying? Some of that's a little bit of guesswork on our part, and some of his answers are a little bit challenging. And so we'll just look at it frankly and see if we can understand what he's saying. Now, I suspect that some of you right away are saying, wait a minute, what about what Jesus said, right? Jesus said in Matthew 19, Matthew 5, Mark 10, Jesus answered these things. Well, some people, including this preacher that I was telling you about, say, well, Jesus was talking to the Jews. And what we need to do is we need to go by what Paul wrote to the Christians. And I know a few people that take that position. They basically say, you know, the Pharisees came up and they asked Jesus, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And they were saying to Jesus, what does the law of Moses say about this? And therefore, everything Jesus says after that doesn't apply to us. I think we can prove that position is false. And we can see it in 1 Corinthians 7. So in the very text that they try to go to instead, you'll see in a moment why the teaching of Jesus on this question is definitely something that Christians live by and applies to us today. So we're going to see that even here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. So having said all that introductory stuff, let's just dive into it. This will be a little bit different than a normal lesson. We're just going to basically walk through the chapter, looking at most of the verses and just take it as it comes and see if we can understand what Paul is writing to us. Questions. Paul says, now concerning the things about which you wrote. So they were writing to Paul. They had some questions. What are some of the questions? Well, reading into this, the first one is, basically, is it okay to get married? Should Christians abstain from marriage? There's other questions where they ask, well, what about, if a person has an unbelieving spouse? And, you know, it must have been frustrating for Paul to deal with the Corinthians. They had some really wild ideas and some conflicting ideas. If you back up to chapter 6, at the end of it, he's having to deal with the opposite point, which is there were people who were saying, you know, when it comes to sexuality, the stomach is made for food and food's made for the stomach, and that's the way our bodies are made, and this is what we enjoy and it feels good, so people should do it because it's natural. And that's kind of the argument they make. And in fact, he asks this question, can a person be joined to prostitutes? Can you imagine having to answer that question to Christians? Is it okay for a Christian to go and be with prostitutes? That's sort of what they're saying. And Paul says, absolutely not. Look in verse 15. Do you not know that you are members of the bodies, members of Christ? Shall I take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never. In Corinth, there was a temple and they worshiped their goddess with prostitution. It's mind-boggling to us that could exist, but that was what they did. So you have some people at the church that are saying, hey, this is fun. You can do whatever you want. And then you turn the page and in chapter 7, the question comes up, is it okay to get married? It's kind of the opposite question. And of course he has to answer that. Let's start in verse 1. Now concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But, verse 2, because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. So the question is marriage okay? Should Christians get married? Of course, we know the answer. Yes, marriage is fine. There's nothing wrong with marriage. It's good. It's God's designed outlet for sexual desire. Sexual activity outside of marriage is sinful. Sexual activity within marriage is the way God intended for it to be. And so he says in verse 2, because of that temptation, people should have a spouse, for the fulfilling of that desire. There's a lot more that could be said about that, but let's move along. Verse 6. Now, as a concession, not a command, I say this, I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. I believe what Paul is saying here is there are some who struggle to control themselves and let them get married if that's the case. But he did not struggle. He was able to remain single and keep himself under control. And so he wishes that everybody had the same amount of self-control. I don't believe he's saying he wishes every Christian was single. That wouldn't be good, actually. If every Christian was single, Where would the families be? Where would the moms and dads be? Where would the elders come from? So he can't be saying, I wish every Christian everywhere were single, but I believe he's saying, I wish everyone was able to live in control of their passions and not have to, have some outlet for that. But he says not everybody has that ability. And so we go on verse 8. He addresses several groups of people. To the unmarried and the widows, I say it's good for them to remain single as I am. Why is it good to remain single? It's probably best at this point to skip down to verse 26 to get this little detail that's helpful. He says, I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. There was some situation going on that we don't know all the details about that was probably a persecution. And in the setting that it was, Paul is saying, for the time being, it's best to stay as you are, if possible. That would be best for you. And that's his advice. And we'll see when we get down there. This is just, that's Paul's personal advice, that he feels like it would be best if you could just hang tight because of this persecution that's happening. This is one of the things that makes this chapter difficult, because we're not sure exactly what that difficulty or distress is, but it's clearly affecting Paul's instructions when he says it's good to remain single, because we know, for instance, from Genesis chapter 2, God says it's not good for a man to be alone, and marriage is always a good thing. So why would Paul say this? It must be something related to their circumstances, that it was good for them to remain single, if at all possible. But in verse 9, he says, if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. So it's good to remain single, but notice he says, it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So I know I'm getting a little silly with my little people here. But the point is, it's better to marry than to burn. I used to think it meant it's better to marry than to be condemned. But everybody universally, when you read commentaries, say that it means it's better to marry than to be inflamed with passion. And so the advice he's giving them is, under the circumstances, if you can control yourself, you'll be better off if you just hang tight and stay single. But if you find yourself inflamed with passion, where this temptation is threatening to draw you into sin, then the better thing to do would be to get married, because that's better than trying to live single, but your passions are inflamed and you're not able to control yourself. So it's better to be married in that case, to people who are qualified and available, eligible to be married. Now, he addresses another group of people in verse 10. To the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not separate from her husband. If she does, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce his wife. Okay. Interesting little phrase here. To the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. What does Paul mean by that? I believe what he's saying is, Jesus has already spoken on this question. He's saying, I'm going to tell you what Jesus, the Lord is Jesus. What did he say about the matter? What did Jesus say about marriage? Well, how do we know, by the way, what Jesus said about marriage? It's written in the Gospels, isn't it? So this is the place that shows that the Lord's teaching on the matter is relevant. And Paul actually refers to it. And so Paul can assume that they understand what Jesus said about it, because he can just take that and say, well, you know, Jesus already told us. To the married people, don't get divorced. What did Jesus say about that? What God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And so Jesus has already answered the question about divorce, and Paul appeals to the Lord's teaching on it, I believe, right here in this very verse, which shows us that passages like Matthew 19, Mark 10, Matthew 5, definitely do apply to Christians, because the teaching of the Lord is referred to here. The wife should not separate from her husband. What did Jesus say about it? Well, I meant to actually turn over. Let's just turn over and read it. Let's look at Mark chapter 10. We always go to Matthew 9. Let's go to Mark chapter 10 to see what the Lord says about this. In Matthew 19, we often go there because he includes the exception, as we say, except for fornication or except for sexual immorality. But in Mark 10, he just lists the general principle without the exception. Beginning in verse 2, the Pharisees came up in order to test him and ask, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And he answered them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. And Jesus said to them, because of your hardness of hearts, he wrote you this commandment. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. And in the house, the disciples asked him again about the matter. And he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. So Jesus has made it clear in his teaching that when God joins people together, man is not to separate that. And if someone divorces and remarries, they're committing adultery. So now back in our passage of 1 Corinthians 7, look at and see if that doesn't fit perfectly with what he says in verses 10 and 11. To the married I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not separate from her husband. If she does, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce his wife. Some people look at that. This is surprising to me, but they say, when it says if she does, they say, oh, so he's saying it's okay. No, he says don't do it. But then he says, what happens if someone does? So what happens in the reality that someone is divorced, what are their options? The divorced person must remain unmarried or be reconciled to their husband because why? Why can't they go marry somebody else? Because Jesus says that would be adultery if you do that. If you divorce your wife and marry somebody else, that's adultery. Now, Jesus gives the exception except for fornication or sexual immorality. Paul doesn't do it. He doesn't even mention that here because that's not his concern in this particular passage. He's just laying out the general rule. The general rule is don't get divorced. And divorced people have two options, remaining unmarried or being reconciled to their husband. And that fits perfectly with what Jesus taught on it. Next, he addresses a situation that Jesus had not spoken on in verse 12. To the rest, I say, I, not the Lord, that if a brother has a wife who is an unbeliever. Most assume that this refers to a scenario where the gospel comes to a place and let's say the husband believes or the wife believes. And so now you have a situation where there's a Christian in the family, but their spouse is not a believer. Their spouse still worships idols. Their spouse is a pagan or whatever. And this question came up, and you can understand from the Corinthians' point of view. They've become Christians now, and they wonder, can I remain married to this person, or am I supposed to leave them, or, you know, what do I do now? Because I'm a Christian, I'm a believer. My wife, she still worships an idol. She doesn't believe in Jesus. You know, what am I supposed to do in that circumstance? And Paul says, I'm going to address this, but Jesus didn't specifically address this question. So he says, now I'm answering this, not the Lord, because we don't have a teaching from Jesus on that particular question. And he goes on to say, so verse 12, to the rest I say, I, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who's an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. If a woman has a husband who's an unbeliever and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. Notice that in both cases, the believer is not to leave the unbeliever. So still the instruction to Christians is, you don't leave. And if they consent, if they willingly stay, let them stay. You don't be the one to end or to disrupt the marriage. Well, what if they don't consent? Verse 15, but if the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. God has called you to peace. So if they want to go, if they want to leave, you let them go. And you let it end peacefully. And in this case, you're not enslaved. You're not bound anymore to that person. That's an interesting connection, by the way. At the beginning of the chapter, we didn't go over these verses. We kind of skipped over it. But he said, when you're married, your body belongs to your spouse. Remember that? So the husband's body belongs to the wife, the wife's body belongs to the husband. Well, so in a sense, you're sort of a servant, a bondservant, a slave, because your body belongs to another. But now he says in this case, when the unbeliever leaves, you become a Christian, your wife doesn't, or vice versa, and then they say, I can't live with it. I can't deal with this. I'm not staying with you anymore. This is crazy what you're into, some kind of crazy cult thing. I don't even know what it is, and I don't want any part of it, and I'm out of here. And they leave. Well, you don't have to start a fight over whatever. You can let them go peacefully, and then your obligations are over. You're not going to be, there's nothing wrong with you. In other words, you haven't failed somehow to hold up your end of the deal, you can let them go. And you're not enslaved to that person at that point. So they're allowed to go. By this peaceful approach, notice that the goal is to save the unbeliever and spouse. In verse 16, how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? How do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? So imagine in the case of the wife of an unbelieving husband, if she says, hey, you're not a Christian, I'm leaving you. Well, hey, but if you stay, maybe this person will be converted, you know, and Peter talks about that by the, you know, without a word, by when they see your good conduct, your chaste behavior, when they see you being the kind of person you should be, perhaps they will be influenced to do the right thing. It might take some time, maybe years down the road, that they'll become a Christian too. So the general principle is don't leave. The Christian in the situation, don't disrupt the marriage. You don't be the one that leaves. Now, I should probably mention a question that comes up here that some Christians and commentators are divided on, and that is, when Paul says you are not enslaved, does that mean he's saying you're free to remarry? And you will find opinions on both sides of that if you talk to people, if you read commentaries. I was looking up three this afternoon, and two of them disagreed on that very point. One said, Paul's not giving you any, he's not talking about remarriage here. The other said, hey, you're not enslaved, you're free to remarry. One thing I know for sure, he doesn't say anything about remarriage there. He said you're not enslaved in that case. So you'd have to take that a step further to make the assumption that he's talking about remarriage, even though he doesn't bring it up at all in that immediate context. But there are people who say that now Paul is adding to Jesus' exception another one. There is an argument that says Jesus makes an exception for fornication or sexual immorality. Paul adds another one for those who have an unbelieving spouse who departs, that frees this person from them, and now they're free to remarry. I'll just say he doesn't say that. That's an assumption people make. I think it would be a very dangerous assumption without any better grounds than that to you know, when souls are at stake. But there are definitely people who take that view. Now, in the next section, Paul points out that in general, people who become Christians should remain in the same station in life in which they were before. So, you know, he had taught the Corinthians, when you become a Christian, all things are new. You're a new creature. So imagine somebody who's a slave and they say, oh, I'm a Christian now. I don't have to be a slave anymore. I'm going to run away. Or somebody who's in a marriage, hey, I'm a Christian now. I'm going to get out of this marriage. It's like I get a whole restart on life. I'm a new person. I'm just going to leave all that behind. And he says, no. Your obligations, your duties, your responsibilities, basically your manner of life is to continue as it was before. Notice what he says in the next 17 through 24. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision, for neither circumcision counts for anything or uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. That's the second time he says it. Verse 21, were you a bondservant when called? Don't be concerned about that. And if you get your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who is called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman in the Lord. Likewise, he who is free is called as a bondservant of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become bondservants of men. The third time, verse 24, so brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him remain with God. The point was, as the gospel is spreading, it was not intended to result in some violent upheaval of society where the gospel comes to town and the next thing you know, the believing wives are all leaving their husbands and the believing slaves are running off. And I mean, that's not the Lord's intention for the gospel, to have people just sort of throw off everything about what their way of life. But you live, if you're a servant, you be a servant, but now you be a Christian servant. You're already married, you be a Christian wife. You were a master, you know, whatever you were, you keep on doing that and you just be a Christian at what you were doing before. And that's his point, remain as you are. But now he's going to apply that to the marriage question in the next context. A fourth group of people, verse 25. Now concerning the betrothed, or your translation say now concerning virgins. The word here could mean a couple of different things. It could mean a young person of marriageable age. It could mean someone who is betrothed, which the closest thing we have to that is a fiance, someone who's engaged. And it could mean literally a virgin, like someone who's never been married. And so there's some question about that, and that's why you see different translations word it differently. The bottom line, it doesn't change for us, so it doesn't really matter. There's parts of this that's not crystal clear to me exactly which type of person he has in mind. But the bottom line is, and as the heading in the ESV says, and yours probably has something similar, it says this is now addressing unmarried people and widows. So whether this betrothed person is engaged or whether they are just a young lady or a young man who's eligible to be married or whatever, the point is they're not married. And the question is, should they get married now or should they not get married? That's the question he's going to answer in this. So now he says, verse 25, concerning the betrothed, I have no commandment from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think, he says, that in view of the present distress, it's good for a person to remain as he is. So now he's extending this principle of remain as you are to say, if, he says, this is my opinion. He makes it really clear. And in fact, he's going to clarify three or four times that this is not a law of God. But his opinion is, in given the general climate that they're in, the present distress, the best thing would be stay as you are. If you're single, just hang tight. And that's his opinion. And he makes that clear. He says in verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. He says, I'm trying to help you here. I'm giving you some advice, but I'm not telling you it's wrong to get married. It's never wrong to get married. Marriage is always okay with God, but he's saying there might be some times when it's not the wisest thing to do, that the timing isn't good. Now, this is the verse, 27:28, that my preacher friend says, see, right there it says, everybody can get remarried. Notice, let me show you how he makes his argument. It says in verse 27, are you free from a wife? So his argument is, well, that means if you've been divorced. And then he says in verse 28, if you marry, you haven't sinned. He said, right there it is. Paul says, if you've been divorced and you get married again, there's no sin involved. But is that what he's saying? First of all, being free from a wife, or some old translations say loosed, doesn't necessarily mean that the person had been previously married. It could be just another expression for being single. And in fact, I mean, speaking from the, not, don't take my word for it, but people who understand the original language would say that when he says free from a wife here, it does not necessarily mean someone who is previously married. It could just be someone who's never been married. But even if that person has been married before, he says, are you free from a wife? So how could someone come to be free from a wife if they had been married? Well, there's one way, and it's in the same context. Look down at the end in verse 39. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is what? Free to be remarried, right? So one way you could be free from a wife would be that your wife has died. Another way you could possibly be free from your wife is by Matthew 19:9, by Jesus' exception there, in the case of infidelity, you might be free from a wife. But is Paul saying here that free from wife is just anybody who's divorced? Well, we know that can't be what he's saying, because you go back up to verses 10 and 11, he says, if a woman, don't get divorced. And if you do divorce your husband, you have two options now, which are remain unmarried or be reconciled. So it doesn't make any sense if he says your two options for divorced people are remain single or go back with your husband. And then you skip down a few verses. Oh, but if you marry, it doesn't matter. It's not a sin. That doesn't make sense in the context here, and it doesn't fit at all with what Jesus is teaching. And so I think this is someone just trying to make this say what they want it to say. You have to read it and decide for yourself. But I don't believe that is what Paul, I don't believe that's what he's talking about in this particular context. He's talking about unmarried people and widows. It doesn't fit with his context, and it doesn't fit with what Jesus said about it. So I think we have to reject that interpretation as being false. Now, my friend did say, this other preacher says, his other argument, I want to show you why it doesn't hold water either. He says, well, why would Paul have to say that if you're single, you can get married? Because everybody knows that. And the reason why, and we're just going to read this and you see if you don't agree. He has to say it's not a sin to get married because he had just said, it's my advice to you to remain single. Now, lest anybody misunderstand, he is not saying that it's a sin to get married. And I think he has to clarify that because he understands as an apostle, when you tell people, I'm going to suggest to you that you remain single, he has to very quickly say, but it's not a sin if you do, because he doesn't want to be confusing them with him giving them some advice versus telling them what the law of the Lord is. Now, as we go ahead and read the rest of this, notice how he clarifies that several times, okay? 35 through 40. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks he's not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity, but having his desire under control and has determined this in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. If her husband dies, she's free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet in my judgment, she's happier if she remains as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God. So Paul says several times here, what's better is remaining single under the circumstances. But is it a sin to marry? No. And he, every time he says it's better, he clarifies it's not a sin if you do though. Because he wants to be sure they understand that his advice doesn't mean that it's sinful to marry. And I think that's why he says three or four times in here, it's not a sin if you do. I'm just trying to make a suggestion, a recommendation, a judgment, advice from a wise apostle that under the present distress, you'd be better off if you remained as you are. Hopefully that makes sense to you. I know I've been studying this for days. I've probably gone fast. I would encourage you to read this chapter two or three times to yourself and just make sure that it makes sense to you. And I'll be glad to answer questions or discuss it with anybody that has any questions about anything that I've talked about tonight. As we close, let me just recap. I know, again, this hasn't been like a normal sermon. I just really wanted to take this chapter and dive into it and share with you some thoughts from it, what I believe Paul is trying to say. First of all, marriage is lawful. He says that about, what, five or six times through here. It's okay to get married. There were some Christians in Corinth that really wondered about this. Is it okay to get married? He says, yes, marriage is okay. Married folks, don't divorce. He said, Jesus told you that. And in the special case of a married person whose spouse is an unbeliever, don't leave them. If you're a Christian and you're married, you stay in the marriage. That's the rule. That's what Jesus said. That's what Paul says. Jesus said, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. If someone is divorced, Paul says, they have two options, remaining unmarried or being reconciled to their spouse if that is possible. He didn't even get into Jesus except for fornication thing. He just deals with the general principle here. If you have a spouse who is not a Christian, you stay with that person. Now he says if that person is intent on going, you can let them go and you're not enslaved in that case. That's not, I think, held against you if they do that. And being single has its benefits. I could have really spent some time on that, but I knew we were running long. There are some benefits to being single. Sometimes people say it's a couple's world and everybody's kind of assumed and expected to get married and it's like, what's wrong with you if you're not married? But Paul goes at great length here to say that single people have some advantages, and even under certain circumstances, he recommends it and thinks it might be better for you. So don't let anybody tell you there's something wrong if you're not married. That's fine. In fact, for widows and for single people in this circumstance that he's talking about, there were some advantages as far as their devotion to the Lord. But he clarifies again two or three times, marriage is fine. Marriage is okay. And I think we have to agree that he assumes there someone who is eligible to be married lawfully, not someone who the Lord has said, and he's already said up here, can't be married. Hopefully that's clear. I can't tell by everybody's face if you're just thinking or if it's just kind of been too long of a day and you're fried or what. But hopefully that's clear. I would be glad to study it some more with anyone who has any questions, as I've already said. So how do we turn this into an invitation? You know, Paul also talks about marriage, and he talks about our relationship with Jesus. And that he says, really, that original marriage in the garden, a husband and wife being joined together, is a picture of Christ and the church. That he wants to be joined together with us, that we become part of his body. That one flesh relationship is pointing to the relationship that Christians have with Jesus. And there's this prediction of a great wedding feast that's coming in the future when the groom comes for his bride. So right now we are betrothed. We're engaged. If you're part of the church, you're engaged to him. And the great wedding day is yet to come in the future when there's, you know, we basically go home to live with him. And so that's a wonderful picture. Take all this marriage stuff and look at it from a spiritual point of view. There's a proposal on the table. The proposal is from the Lord to have you join the body of his bride. If you have never done that, the ways we do that are simple. If you believe Jesus is the Son of God, and if you are, want to become his disciple, you want to have your sins washed away, he tells us how. We have to be willing to confess he's God's Son, turn away from our sins and be baptized to have our sins washed away, and then begin living a life of following after him. That's all very clear in the scriptures. We haven't looked at that tonight. But if anyone would like to learn more about it, we'd be glad to study with you. If there's someone tonight who needs to respond to the invitation and we can help you, let us know while we stand and sing.